This is PodTech News. I'm Catherine Girardeau. Today we're talking with Art Brodsky, Communications Director of Public Knowledge. Public Knowledge is a public interest advocacy organization dedicated to fortifying and defending a vibrant information commons. It's based in Washington, D.C. Art Brodsky is a veteran of D.C. telecommunications and internet journalism and public relations. Before joining Public Knowledge, Art worked for 16 years with Communications Daily, a leading trade publication. He covered Congress through the passage of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and other major pieces of legislation. He also covered telephone regulation at the Federal Communications Commission and at state regulatory commissions. We talked with Art Brodsky about the telecom bill, recently passed by the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee. Both the telecom bill and possible network neutrality amendments to it will be taken up by the full Senate after the July 4th recess. Art Brodsky, welcome to PodTech News.
Thanks. Good to be here.
First of all, could you boil down for us exactly what Public Knowledge does?
We, as you said, are an advocacy group. We work on a whole batch of fascinating issues. Net neutrality is at the top of the list at the moment, but that's certainly not our only issue. Among the other things we do in the general concept of openness is a lot of copyright and intellectual property issues, particularly talking about consumers' rights in the age of digital media, what you have the right to do, what the law says you have the right to do, and what big media companies say you have the right to do. And those aren't always the same things.
We're here today to talk about one of the top issues you just mentioned that Public Knowledge is working on, network neutrality. Could you define network neutrality for us?
Sure. Basically, network neutrality is the theory that on the Internet, all types of data are equal. Not necessarily that every bit of service is equal, but in the sense that all video should be equal, or all health services should be equal, or all sales things should be equal, that everyone is treated the same without playing favorites.
Public Knowledge is actively supporting network neutrality legislation. A net neutrality amendment to a telecom bill, which was recently passed by the Senate Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, was rejected on a tie vote. A tie vote 11-11 means the amendment lost, but supporters of the legislation are claiming the tie is a victory. And I wonder if you could tell us, could just sort this out for us. What exactly happened in Congress?
Well, what happened in the Senate committee was totally encouraging, because what you're seeing is an absolute building of momentum for the pro-net neutrality forces, of which we are pleased and proud and honored to be a part. I mean, we started out way behind the phone companies, just getting started as things got rolling in the House. And by yesterday, we had a tie vote in the Senate Commerce Committee. And what that shows is that this is a very contentious issue, that those not only in Washington but around the country who favor net neutrality are not to be taken lightly. This is a pivotal issue, and it's definitely in play. So even though it didn't make it into the bill, the fact is it's still an issue to be reckoned with.
And tell us a little bit more about what made the current debate stand out. Who were the main players in Congress?
Well, there are three folks who stand out. Yesterday, were Senator Olympia Snowe, the Republican from Maine, and Senator Byron Dorgan, the Democrat from North Dakota. They had teamed up on what's called the Snowe-Dorgan Amendment to this telecom legislation that would have put in place some stringent net neutrality regulations. So they are definitely to be commended for that, and they stuck to it and stuck to their guns. In addition, Senator Ron Wyden, who introduced some net neutrality legislation actually ahead of Snowe and Dorgan, is also a key player in this. He unfortunately is no longer on the Senate Commerce Committee, so he was sort of relegated to a side role as Snowe and Dorgan came to the fore during committee consideration. But Wyden said on the floor that he would hold up Senate proceedings of any bill that did not have net neutrality in it. So he's definitely a player. And then, of course, you have on the other side Senator Ted Stevens, who is the chairman of the Commerce Committee, who is dead set against net neutrality, as are most of the other committee Republicans. You know, it's sort of really unfortunate that this thing became a partisan issue. It doesn't have to be, but it unfortunately turned out that way.
Yeah, I was going to say the 11-11 was along party lines with the exception of Republican Olympia Snowe. Is that right?
That is right. And even that was sort of amazing. I mean, the Democrats are a very independent bunch and have been for years. And the fact that they all held together, they're a very disparate group, ranging from Maria Cantwell and Barbara Boxer to Ben and Bill Nelson, who were a lot more conservative. So the fact that they held together on that, we thought was very encouraging.
Now, a statement issued by your organization, Public Knowledge, says the telecom bill passed in Senate committee is about more than net neutrality. So now we're talking about the overarching bill that did pass. What else is it about?
Well, as we said in our statement, at the end of the day, what did pass was that control of content on the Internet was given to the telephone and cable companies, and control over consumer electronics and your right to use digital media was given over to the movie and record companies. And those are two other issues in which we've been deeply involved. One is called the broadcast flag, which is an issue in which a bit of digital code would be inserted into over-the-air digital TV broadcasts and would be received by consumer electronics device like your DVR or your TV set with instructions on what should happen in that signal, whether it could be stored, copied, forwarded to a TV in another room, whatever. This is a huge issue. We fought in the appeals court and actually beat back the FCC last year when the appeals court ruled that this was way beyond the FCC's jurisdiction.
Is this an attempt to circumvent digital media piracy?
That is sort of the theory, and I stress the theory. As far back as 2002, companies like Viacom were telling the FCC that without a broadcast flag, they would not put high-quality, high-def programming on their network. And, of course, it's now 2006, and they have more high-quality, high-def programming on the network than ever before, so they really haven't shown a need for it. So, but the end game, the end result is that, A, you'll have, in the broadcast flag issue, Hollywood determining how consumer electronics are designed, having the FCC ratify those decisions, having consumers go through a lot of time and money, because even if these technologies are approved, there's no guarantee they work with one another. So you could have a TV set with one set of broadcast flag code in it and DVR with another, and they wouldn't talk to each other. So it's just going to create a hellacious mess. And the other half of that is content controls on digital radio, which involve satellite radio and terrestrial digital radio, which is just coming to the fore. That's going to be equally as bad.
And who was given control of that in this telecom bill that passed?
In the telecom bill, and this measure is being pushed by the record companies and the recording industry, it doesn't specifically set out a what we call it for shorthand an audio flag as it does for broadcast. What it does do, though, is set up a sort of stacked advisory committee to the FCC, which is supposed to come up with some audio content controls, and then if that group can't do it, then the FCC is supposed to do it. And what the point of that is that the record companies try and get around the law that we've had for years about letting us record off the radio by saying, well, we just want people to record it as we play it. So, for example, if you've got satellite radio, you can record, say, 2 hours of shows and then disaggregate the songs so you have all of one artist together, all of another artist together. You can't move the songs off of the receiver, like the portable XM, for example, but you can make it more to your liking, and it's that customization that they don't like because they interpret it as a lost record sale or CD sale. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the bill that's very controversial. I mean, from our point, the net neutrality and the flag stuff is very controversial. There's some video franchising things, the terms under which telephone companies would get into cable that other groups have problems with. There's some federal preemption of state authorities that other people have problems with. So there's a whole host of controversial issues in this bill.
Now let's get back to network neutrality and the FCC. Opponents of network neutrality are saying that legislation is premature, and they indicate that the FCC and lawyers can sort out any abuses of power by network operators, such as blocking websites, et cetera. How do you respond to that?
There are two issues in that. First of all, what's interesting to note is that until we started raising the issue, the phone companies never said that they wouldn't block. It's only after we raised the issue that they promised to do it. But here's the gut level point is that last September, the FCC changed the rules of the game. Ever since the Communications Act of 1934, the Internet had been network neutral because that law said that the phone system under which the Internet grew up, which is the old dial-up system, kept the network operators out of the content business. They couldn't play favorites. They couldn't determine what goes on the network or insert themselves between the content provider, like a website, and the customer. Last September, the FCC passed a new rule defining broadband out of the Communications Act. And so by doing that, they gave the network operators, the phone companies and the cable companies, total power over what goes over their networks. So it's not right to say that the FCC and the lawyers can sort it out, because the FCC essentially took the services out from under their own jurisdiction.
Now, another argument by the telecoms is that they say that they need to be able to charge web firms for prioritized content delivery in order to pay for rolling out widespread broadband access. What's Public Knowledge's perspective on this?
We certainly want them to recover their investment, and they're doing that. You and I and everyone who has broadband pays every month. Everyone who puts material up onto the web, whether you're one person with a server and a blog or the biggest content company there is, pays to get onto the Internet. In some cases, millions and millions of dollars. I mean, that's why a Google or a Yahoo responds as quickly as it does, because they have lots of net access, they have caching, they have all those things. So it's not like anyone's getting any particular service for free. People pay to get online.
Yes, but they still argue that this isn't enough, that if they're going to really roll out universal broadband access, they need more money. This is their argument.
Well, that's sort of a standing argument. I mean, that kind of argument has been around for decades. I mean, people always used to file what they called rate cases in the old days asking for more money. I remember hearing before the Telecommunications Act was passed in 96 that there's billions of dollars of investment parked by to the side of the road, get waiting to go. I've yet to hear any regulated industry say that they've got enough money, regardless of the circumstance. The way to get the money is to let the Internet bloom, to make the network more useful, and you don't do that by controlling it. I mean, look how the Internet, as an institution, grew up under the dial-up regulated system. It flourished immensely because there were no rules. As Vint Cerf, one of the people who wrote the code for the original TCP/IP protocol, said, you don't have to ask anyone's permission. You just get a service up or get a server up and you do it. When they changed the rules to sort of to put the telephone and the cable companies in control, that whole paradigm changes. And the network, the Internet as we know it today, could become less useful, which means in the long run they'll make less money.
If network neutrality rules are not enacted, how is using the Internet likely to change for the public?
It depends a lot on the business plans of the providers. At this point, Verizon is rolling out fiber, which has more capacity. AT&T, to date, has been content to try and put more stuff over copper. But eventually down the road, what you can have are two parallel systems. One is today's Internet, what Verizon, for example, calls the, quote, public Internet. And I don't like that term, but that is their term. And right now, it functions at a certain level. I mean, get a megabit or two into your house, which we consider great, but is really substandard around the world. Then if they establish what they call a private Internet, which is sort of millions of people on a, quote, private network, that would function much faster, much more efficiently. People would migrate to that and services would migrate to that, leaving those who can't leave on the dirt road. And that would include most startups, many people who perhaps didn't want to pay an extra 10 or 15 bucks a month on top of what they're already paying for access, and it would be a self-limiting proposition where the Internet that we know and enjoy today could sort of become a second-class network, which would not be of benefit to anyone.
Opponents of network neutrality say, well, competition will take care of it. If you don't like the access you're getting, you can just go to another provider.
Well, there aren't that many providers in many parts of the country. I mean, the last figures we saw are that half the country may have a choice between two providers, a phone company or a cable company, which is sort of a classic duopoly. Of that group, half of those may have, roughly half, have a choice of one or the other, and then there's a 20% at the end that don't have either. So it's not that competition is widespread, and it's not like there are lots more providers coming online. that have the capacity to offer a full, robust broadband service. I mean, we certainly hope at some point other technologies may contribute, but for the foreseeable future, they're not.
What's likely to be ahead for network neutrality legislation and the telecom legislation in Congress?
Nobody really knows at the moment. It's sort of in limbo. It's obvious that the bill that passed by the Commerce Committee the other day is not going to make it through the full Senate. There will be intense negotiations over the next few weeks, and we'll see what kind of agreements people can come to.
Art Brodsky, thanks so much for being on PodTech News.
My pleasure.
Art Brodsky is Communications Director of Public Knowledge, a public interest advocacy organization dedicated to fortifying and defending a vibrant information commons. We reached him in his office in Washington, D.C.